The Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics. Every 2 years, every 4 years, it's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is a mantra, or white rabbit genocide you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. We have lions, we have tigers, we have Nazis. Oh, my. On this Follow the White Rabbit, I'm going to answer all these questions I keep getting that have piled up in regarding South America, stuff going on in South America, stuff about the Third Reich or the Fourth Reich, the different information that's been coming down the pipeline actually just this year in regarding Antarctica and what's going on. And not a lot is known, but what is known is fairly provocative. And I'm going to start going over this. I have questions about many of you have seen that movie, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And in it, Indiana Jones is, of course, going up against some Soviets. Typically, Indiana Jones goes up against Nazis, but in this one, he's going up against Soviets. They switched it from Nazis to commies. And they're in South America, and they're looking for the lost city of gold, I believe it is. And I haven't seen the whole thing. But I know the basic story, because you're getting into the story of Akakor. And the story of Akakor is part of Nazi fiction, basically. A Nazi fiction, or so most people thought. We don't really know what's fiction and what's true anymore. But that's where it comes from. It comes from the story of Akakor. And I've been asked a lot of questions about this, and I've never touched on it. But I try to touch all this stuff, at least from a racial perspective. Because that's what my audience wants, and that's what the numbers say I have to do to get listeners to get on a consistent message. You got to talk about Nazis and all this other stuff they want to hear about, which is fine. That's what I'll talk about. I'll talk about anything you want me to talk about. But we have this little problem. We have this little rabbit. That's us, indigenous white rabbits of Europe, stretched across the whole top of the planet and a few other places, and we ain't got a home. We have this World War II event, these Nazis, and we have this Mein Führer, as I call him, Adolf Hitler. He's the rabbit that won't die. I have my own version of revisionist history regarding World War II. I believe that if Hitler would have died a couple years earlier, they would have won the war. Because from the grave, the guy doesn't appear to be able to lose. He can't lose from the grave. just this week or just a couple weeks ago, I am emailed this stuff all the time. And this stuff comes out, and we don't see it in the West for months later. But this is Bangkok's Nazi chic. Patrick Nguyen, Global Post. This was published back in January 22nd, 2010. And I'll put this up on my Twitter. Talking about all the little Thailand guys, Thailand kids wearing swastika, Nazi gears. And this stuff is so much more global than it is in the West. And these guys just can't die. So the question comes in, what do they do? And I went in this before, and what exactly is going on? There's been a pattern of information that is kind of odd and kind of funny and kind of scary to a lot of people, I guess. You have all these what was labeled neo-Nazi Lanzig novels, that fictional accounts that came out of Germany in the 80s. They're considered neo-Nazis type fictional accounts, and there are several more. And these fictional accounts about Nazi weapons are now being run on the Science Channel, the Discovery Channel, the Nat Geo Channel, the National Geographic Channel, on the Mystery Quest, the Discovery Channel. We've seen it all. Hitler, Nazi secret weapons. But the stuff is now coming mainstream that was supposedly only fiction. And so I've been asked about AccraCorp. Is the same going to be true in South America? Is the same going to be true with this nonsense about the Antarctic? And the most honest answer I can give you is I just don't know yet. I just don't know yet. Just this month, a famous historical society announced that they may be doing a trip into the Amazon jungles, looking for something having to do with AccraCorp, which was kind of mind blowing, because if they're going looking for something, they know what they're looking for and they will find something. They have a tendency to do that, this particular group, which kind of threw a lot of people off. But I'm going to go into this, and I'm going to keep talking about it. I'll try to answer all the questions I get, or I'll try to at least fill you in on the direction this stuff goes. But the story of AccraCorp, or the Lost City of Gold, makes it into the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. They didn't call it AccraCorp, because if you looked up AccraCorp, you'd know it was immediately Nazis. But what they did do was this Lost City of Gold. And it has to do with aliens, all the Nazi stuff. I mean, it's all there, but it's not necessarily there. They change it around a little bit. But let's go over what the Nazis were looking for. Let's go over what Mein Führer, what this white rabbit said he was doing. He said he was looking for Aryan origins. He said he was looking for the Aryan gods. Everyone on this planet knows that. People came out of the woodwork. Different Indian tribes apparently came out of the woodwork. The Japanese partnered with them, who knew what he was looking for on some level. And what they were doing, and this is, they show you this all the time on the Nazi shows, but they never really tell us the full story. What they were doing when they go to the Canary Islands, what they're doing when they go to Tibet, they're bringing stuff back into Germany, and then we know now they're also bringing stuff massively into South America, before even the World War II started. They're all over South America. German had major business interests in South America. They had a large communication. One of the Nazis' most sophisticated communication network was in South America, the Bolivar network. They had all kinds of stuff going on in South America way before the war. And what they were doing was basically looking for residue and what they believed that they descend from these an advanced paleo-ancient civilization. This paleo-ancient civilization went down. Elements of it left. It was split up in some kind of epic battle. There's a losing side and a winning side. The winning side left and may be coming back. We call that the second coming. We don't know enough about the first coming to talk about the second coming, but we call it the second coming. Yeah, it ends up in the New Testament. But they went looking for these guys, or who they thought these guys were, and they're putting together pieces from what they believed. It doesn't matter whether it's Egypt, Tibet, the residues of this paleo-ancient civilization. They believe these myths, these stories, that there's more to them than meets the eyes. And they're putting together this stuff, and they're trying to resurrect this technology, this paleo-ancient physics. We've already got into that before with the Glock, that actual bell-shaped thing they always show on the Discovery Channel dancing around. Well, that's not something they invented, and that's a pretty tough one to swallow. But what they are doing is they are looking at South America. Now, why are they looking at South America? Well, let's go back into what they're reading. They're reading the Babylonian texts. They're at the forefront of translating them. They're translating a lot more than we know about and things that we've never read or looked at. And one thing that becomes clear, one thing we know to be true, based on whoever, it doesn't matter how bad the translations are in academia, one thing we know to be true is that they had this group of the White Rabbit Gods, one whose title is actually God. They had a big mining operation in South America. And this was, some say, 360,000 years ago. Some say half a million years ago. But one of the interesting incidents that they would have been reading about, the one that draw most people's attention, is in an episode that comes out of the blue in the Bible, and no one can really explain what's going on there. This is the one that the good Dr. Farrell talks about quite often, and that is the Tower of Babel moment. The Tower of Babel, when the thing gets crushed to the ground. And we know from the Babylonian text that predates any other story about the Tower of Babel of what basically was going on there. A war broke out, and the being titled God and his son put the screws to him there. And they launched a surprise attack against the Tower of Babel. It wasn't moral, it was political. And they wiped it out. Whatever it was, whatever technology they were fooling with, whatever was going on in the Middle East at that time, they put the smack down, basically, talking American wrestling terms. And they launched that attack from South America. That's what it says. So it reads very clearly. In fact, the way it reads is they launched it from a secret space base somewhere in South America. Now, this becomes really crazy, really wild, really woolly of thousands and thousands of year-old texts that the Nazis are reading. But one thing is clear, they have a pattern. They're taking stuff, all kinds of crazy stuff they're looking for, hollow earth that I've never touched on. I'm going to touch into it a little bit. But on the TV, they make the Nazis sound absolutely harebrained. They're looking at hollow earth. They're looking at Canary Islands. They didn't find anything. But then they are shuttling off to South America. They're doing all kinds of stuff in South America. They're looking for the rainforest. They're not killing Indians. They're cutting deals with Indians on some level. And that is a brief overview. And I'm going to go here and there. I'm going to go into Akakor. I'm going to go into Tantuka Nara. I'm going to go into some of these different characters, or even Admiral Byrd. And we're going to go into what we know to be true right now in 2010 of what's going on in the Antarctica. And we don't know a whole lot. There's just a direction. There's a lot of smoke here. One of the challenges most people have with the history of the Nazis, and this is something I've never talked about, most real historians, we have a situation where someone has lost a war. They at least lost a battle. That's kind of clear. They lost Europe. Europe's destroyed. And every single textbook I've ever read in America growing up talks about how horrible, how evil the Nazis were, how everything they said was horrible and evil and a lie. This is a fact. These facts are undisputable. Most people on the world have been trained in that particular Nazi scenario. World War II, Nazis were the bad guys. They're evil. They lost. Winners write the history books. That's the way the world works. And everything they did was evil and a lie. Except in regard to one thing. Except in regarding how the Nazi leadership died. In regarding how the Nazi leadership died, the Nazis were 100% truthful, 100% honest, and their stories take up the pages of our history books. So you have a contradiction in our history books right now, right in front of our faces that no one ever talks about. The Nazis are all liars, they're all evils, everything they did was a failure, they lost the war. And then we have part two. We have the big conundrum. But everything they said regarding how their leadership died was always true. Well, that basically enters into a huge problem for most legitimate historians. There's a lot of question marks to that because one, losers don't write their own obituary. Losers have their obituaries written by the winners. But the winners in World War II never wrote any obituaries. Adolf Hitler's obituary was not written by the Anglo elites. Adolf Hitler's obituary was not written by the Soviets. No, I'm sorry, it wasn't. It was written by Nazis. Nazis. Not make-believe Nazis, but Nazis. party members. Only a handful ever saw these guys die. Only a handful of official stories ever made it out. There's a handful of contradictions, legitimate, and there's been a lot of questions about it. From a legitimate historical standpoint, it's the first time in the history of the world we've had such a big war where the losers are writing their own obituary. And we are told most legitimate historians that have questions about it are afraid to question it. Right? You're afraid to question it because it comes from an angle like, oh, you think Elvis is living. The challenge is that Adolf Hitler, you can't kill these guys. It doesn't matter whether it's Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Damned Crystal Skull. It doesn't matter whether it's through historical societies that are supposed to be giving this up years ago. This stuff will not die. It doesn't matter whether it's on the streets of Bangkok in t-shirts. No one's ever seen anything like this. They are consistently planting memes, whether it be crazy, stupid, top-secret fictional weapons that end up in the Discovery Channel. They are consistently planting these memes and coming back to them stronger and stronger and stronger. And over the past 10 years, we've seen an absolute mind-numbing amount of information come out regarding FBI files, you name it. And we have the glorious Dr. Joseph P. Farrell, the Oxford PhD in patristics, which is early church history, who starts researching Nazis. He basically quit teaching school to research Nazis because it's such a dicey area, I'm guessing. And he starts putting out these books. They're some of the most provocative books anyone's ever read because he's so well-sourced. He's not just putting something up on a web page guessing. He's saying what is known, what isn't known, and what is known is very provocative. On my Twitter right now, I have one of his latest, what I think is one of his best, most concise interviews. It's Joseph on Veritas. I have that up on my Twitter. It's on YouTube. There's eight of them. There's eight little snippets. They're about nine minutes long. You can listen to the whole thing in under an hour. It's very concise, and you'll like it. You'll get a good overview of what this guy knows and what they know and what we don't know. But you can quickly see that there's a contradiction. We have an enemy, the losers, who are allowed to write their own obituary. You can't really point to that happening in the history of the world. And from a legitimate historical standpoint, there is legitimate questions about many elements of World War II. I'm always get this question, Horace, reading Dr. Joseph P. Verrill's books, and this is a great question, the Nazis clearly had more technology than we were led to believe. Right now, you know, this particular emailer was watching something on the Science Channel about Hitler's advanced weaponry. He's like, clearly they have some of this operational. Why didn't they use it? Well, guess what? They did. Yeah, they did use it. They used it on the Eastern Front. Yeah, if you know anything about the communists, you know that not only did they have this huge Slavic army, and that's horrible for Europeans to be at war with each other, but, you know, welcome to the history of the last 4,000 years. But they had this huge Slavic army, but they also had a lot of other elements they brought up from the Eurasia. They brought up from the Far East. They had the orc rabbit, hordes of orc rabbits. No one really knows how many they really brought in, but they brought in all kinds of them as fast as they could produce guns. So we know a lot about the major Slavic deaths, whether it be 25 million, which is outrageous and disgusting. But we really don't know about the others because apparently Stalin was afraid to, they were afraid to reveal it, that they could be so inferior. But some are estimating now that as many as 50 million non-Slavs got annihilated on the Eastern Front. They were hitting them with fuel air bombs, or one of the predecessors to the fuel air bomb. And if you know anything about those are like little tactical nukes. And they were wiping them out, so much so that Stalin threatened to hit them with poison gas and stuff like that. And if you listen to the Joseph Farrell interview on Veritas, you'll get a good idea of what is believed. In other words, instead of having 25 million lost in the Eastern Front, most believe it's 75 million, and 50 million of them were non-Slavs. And they were just wiping them out, because they had some big populations that just disappeared out there. Since they were an ideological enemy and since they were considered subhuman, well, they were teeing off on them with this new advanced weaponry. So I believe they were using it. One of the famous Nazis escapes me, but Joseph Farrell talks about it in his diary, talks about using fuel air bombs on the Eastern Front. And these type of bombs, and they're like little tactical nukes. They're final solutions with no air pollutions, and they're just teeing off. They wouldn't do it in Europe. They wouldn't do it against the Allies for some reason, but they sure as hell did it on the whatever was on the Eastern Front, and a lot of poor Slavs got in their way, I'm sure. And of course, they didn't think too highly of the Slavs, or at least some of them didn't. But you know, there's a lot of contradictions in Nazism, but they did use some of this weaponry. And when the history is finally told, they did use it, and with grisly effects. But let's go into Akkakor briefly. Akkakor was a novel, basically. It's a legend of Akkakor. It's a novel that was written by a man named Karl Brugger. That's Karl, K-A-R-L-B-R-U-G-G-R. And it talks about a hidden city. A hidden city called Akkakor. And the hidden city is off near Machu Picchu, basically. And that the Nazis had got to this hidden city. And that the Nazis had a base there. And it's all this wild, fantastical tale. It's as wild and fantastical as Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, believe it or not. But he basically, Carl, and I won't go into details. I will put up stuff on my Twitter so you can actually read for yourself, because it is some fantastical stuff, and I don't know what's true and what's false. I do believe that South America has some of the most ancient clues to our race. I believe that to be true. And maybe some other races as well. But when it comes to the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, I think our history, more can be told probably in South America than anywhere else, if you know what you're looking for and you know where to find it. Based on the Babylonian texts themselves. But they were looking for it. And those speculating, what the Nazis were doing in South America, where they were looking for, they were looking for an inert space base, secret space base, I'm guessing. What did they find? I don't know. But they've done something, and they found something. I'll go into what we know to be true about South America and Antarctica right now, especially Antarctica, in a bit. But when you get into the legend of Akkakor, it is just that. It's a fictional tale. The person that tells the tale to Karl Brugger and takes him on this little trip is Tantuka Nara. Now, Tantuka Nara is considered a German scam artist. His real name is Hans Gunther Hawk. He was born in Coburg in 1941. His mother was an ambassador from the Third Reich to some country in South America. And he's a German-Brazilian jungle guide and a self-styled Indiana chieftain, best known as a sole source of stories on the lost city of Akkakor. No, so what is Akkakor? It's this fictional city. It's like an El Dorado. I just read a big expose on it in a historical society that would never in a million years I thought would put this nonsense in there. I don't know what's true and what's false anymore. I'm like an agnostic. I don't know what to believe. Other than they've done something, and this is going to be a little wild as we come into the end game in World War III. But I don't know if it's like a metaphor. Akkakor is a metaphor for an entranceway. We know based on satellite imagery that there are all kinds of underground caves and patterns on the planet. Caves and passageways. I've never been in any, but I know for a fact there are. I know for a fact right now that White Rabbit militaries dig bases deep under the ground. Well, we've probably been doing that for a long time, as long as we have the technology to do it. I've heard that some say it's an entranceway. An entranceway you walk in, it's like has Odinist-like lamps that automatically turn on when it gets near Rabbit. And it's a passageway deep underground, and the passageway goes all the way underground and all the way into the Antarctic. That's the craziest story I've ever heard, but that's what I've heard. Who knows? I don't know. I have no idea what these guys have done. But there are going to be all kinds of stuff under the jungle in South America that we don't know about. You know, Brazil is as long as America is wide. Yeah, Brazil is as long as America is wide. And when you get an hour and a half outside the coast, there's no one. Everyone lives within an hour and a half of the coast, basically, or within an hour of the coast. So you have a population half the size of America, 150 million or so, I believe, within an hour of the coast. There's a huge area no one knows about. And of course, Akkakor is considered over by Machu Picchu, which is a whole other area of South America. And you've got all these rivers laced through things. Let me read you an account from an actual colonel, or I'll abbreviate an account from an actual colonel from 2001 about this stuff. And this account was in 2001, and right now I'm looking at something from a historical society. It's an actual magazine, publication. And they're talking. I'm seeing pictures, and I see pictures of Nazi graves, several in the Amazon. These are pictures of Nazi graves, and I also see a picture of a pre-war expedition of Germany into the particular area, into the Amazon River area, deep into the interior of Brazil, basically. And they're on boats with little swastikas and little boats. It looks like they have some Indian guides and whatnot. But there has been some different reports from, I would say, professional soldiers of the type. One from a colonel, and I won't mention his name, who basically went on this huge voyage that you can go on in South America. Yeah, they have these pretty cool voyages where you can get on a, or I don't know how cool it'd be being in a rainforest, but this big voyage on a reed catamaran, and he went from the headwaters of the Rio Beni, which is in Bolivia, to the Amazon, and took that all the way to the Atlantic in 2001. And he talks about these crazy meetings with neo-Nazis on the quest to find Hitler's gold and stuff. But what he talks about is during all this, a story emerged that the Germans had a base at an ancient archaeological site that they named Akakor on one of the headwaters of the Amazon. Of course, that's it's thought to be in Brazil or Peru. And apparently they had a deal with the Indians, and they promised the Indians, as they won the war, that the Germans were only interested in their ancient cities, a couple ancient cities, the coastal areas. They wouldn't touch the little Indians, the little Amazonian Indians. They would not fool with their rainforest, or wouldn't fool with their habitats, basically. We'll leave you alone. And the Indians apparently helped them find things, because after all, they've been there for thousands of years, too. I mean, they've been sitting there for thousands of years, and they all know about the Kon-Tiki, Viracocha, and all this stuff. Kon-Tiki Viracocha is this giant white god who just slams things with lightning bolts. He sounds like a South American Zeus, basically. But anyways, and the story went on, and a lot of it, none of it has ever been verified, but the story won't die. It's one of those type of things, typical Nazi type stuff. The story went on to say that the base was supplied by U-boat. Now, the question is, you know, I've been asked this question, could a U-boat get up there? Sure. The Germans get anywhere in a U-boat. I mean, U-boats could sail in some pretty shallow water. It just depends on where in the Amazon, and, you know, I have no way to know where this stuff is going. Other than they're putting this stuff in serious historical journals, which is crazy in itself. This is stuff you'd get laughed out of the room for. This is the stuff of movies, like Indiana Jones movies, literally. But there's been no proof that there's been no pictures of U-boats or up the Amazon or anything like that. And then they went on to look at all these different cities, and I can't even pronounce the names of this ancient kingdom, the Uga Mangu Lala. You know, instead of Nazi Never Never Land, it's Nazi La La Land. And then I'm looking at a map of where these ancient cities are supposedly at. They're probably not accurate, but in my mind, it would probably be some type of acronym. If it's true, it's some type of acronym for what they're looking for. They're looking for some entrance way to something. And these cities are not above ground, by the way. They're deep underground cities. It becomes a total mystery. Other than the fact that we know that they were reading Babylonian texts, we know because they did the first translations. The Germans did them as far back as 1850. We know that they were all over South America. I'm looking at pictures of them all over South America. In fact, even you ever heard of the Hindenburg, the big Zeppelin that caught on fire and burned down? Those big Zeppelins, they were in the process of taking them, or had taken them for aerial photography trips over South America. They're looking for something, and they're going all over the world grabbing residues of what they feel is a paleo ancient civilization, and they're bringing it back into South America. Now, whether they had bases in the rainforest, I wouldn't surprise me if they didn't have one. I mean, I'm looking at archaeologists, German archaeologists with the Nazi flag coming up the Amazon. So obviously they're doing something there. You know, they're looking for something, and they're looking for exactly what they're telling us they're looking for, Aryan origins. It's right in their documents of the Anaerobe. Hitler's looking for the Aryan gods. What they found, I do not know. I do not know. It's very difficult to answer questions when I have historical societies putting this stuff out. Now, the character this stuff comes from, Tantuca Nara, is considered a liar. Carl Brugger was shot in the head, I believe, somewhere in Rio. Before his book could even be published, he was shot in the head on the streets of Rio de Janeiro in 1984. Now, Tantuca Nara, several different people have went missing who went on searches in the rainforest with him. other than his mother being an ambassador for the Third Reich, I don't know. I don't know whether, you know, it's one big wild mystery, and I will put all this up on my website, on the Twitter, and you can go to the crazy different, whether it be the wiki on AkaCore or the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull wiki and some of the different stuff in South America, and you can see how crazy the stuff gets down there. When you get into things like the Aramamu, this mysterious door that was just found in 1996. You got to see this thing. Looks like something out of Lord of the Rings. But you got all kinds of wild stuff in South America. I can only know what they were looking for, what the Nazis were looking for, because they told us. And the texts read very clearly on this subject. But the whole truth of the matter is, I don't know. You'll have to read it and form your own opinions. We do know a little bit more about the Antarctic. We know about the Antarctic just because they've been releasing seismic data. Seismic data, of course, the first just came out this year. It came into public view of someone's released Antarctic seismograms. Seismograms measure things like earthquakes. Seismographs are basically science, and science does mean something. And Dr. Farrow in the back end of the Roswell and the Reich, as soon as everyone thought that the whole Antarctic story was a big bunch of hogwash, out of left field, these seismographs come out of Antarctica. And they basically show the seismographs on the day that George Bush Jr. launched a big attack against Saddam Hussein in Iraq. The same time they launched that invasion, they have some interesting seismographs that were kicked out from the Antarctic, released just in 2010. And they are eye-opening, because you're dealing with science. Science always means a whole lot more to me than just hyperbole on the internet. But basically Dr. Farrell goes out and shows is, she shows what it looks like when all's quiet, and he shows what it looks like when there's an earthquake in Antarctic. He also shows something else, which are standing long waves. And standing long waves are not something that occur, and not something you're going to get occurring in, let's say, New York, unless you have something like a scalar weapon going off, or a scalar defense, as crazy as it sounds, a force field. You're dealing with Green Goddess technology. Our next generation technology is all going to be based on this physics, and it will be elements of it will be scalar, but they're showing standing long waves. And then, of course, they go on and show standing long waves, and then you have detonations, two different detonations. Now, what it means, I don't know. A detonation, you can differentiate anyone that can read a seismograph, and if you've ever seen one once, you've seen one 1,000 times, you can easily differentiate between a detonation. Anyone can differentiate between a detonation like a tactical nuke and an earthquake. They look a little bit different. In fact, they look a lot different. But in between these detonations, you have this standing long wave. Again, if you listen to the Joseph Farrell Veritas interview that I have on my Twitter, you can hear him talk about it. It is what it is. It's science, and it's led to a great deal of new interest on South America, new interest on what Nazis were looking for. The historical societies are now putting out this crazy stuff. I'm more interested in the science behind it and what's actually going on down there. But something's going on down there. I've been told right now in Antarctica. Post September 11, 2001, something has been going on, and that most of the planet's very unaware of, because it's pretty remote. If a neutron bomb went off there, there's been several times in the past they've let them off there, and we don't know about it. So you go into all this innuendo, and it's almost impossible to talk about other than to lay it out on the table and tell you there's a lot known. That they were there, and a lot unknown, and that there's something going on in the Antarctic based on seismographs to this day. And, of course, we have the famous Falkland Wars, and it's clear now that most people that Falkland Wars was to make sure that elements of the Anglo elites could maintain their listening posts over South America, which makes sense. If they have the problems they have now, they certainly would want to try to keep an ear on what's going on down there. And of course, what's the big deal with New Schwabenland? What's the big deal with the Antarctica? Well, we know that there's a freshwater lake that's gotten a tremendous amount of attention, and there's other areas as well. But there's some magnetic anomalies down there, and a magnetic anomaly can be you know, as simple as a big meteor deep underneath the ground or something like that, deep underneath the ice. But this magnetic anomaly is huge. It's the size of Los Angeles. It's a monster. It's on the edge of a lake that is the size of one of the Great Lakes that surround Michigan. If you've seen the map of the United States, you see Michigan, you got those big, deep freshwater lakes, the Great Lakes. Well, there's one of those, Lake Vostok in the Antarctic, and there's a huge magnetic anomaly. I've heard that there's more than one magnetic anomaly down there, but this one is huge. And it's gotta be something. I don't know what it is, but the idea that you would have an ancient city buried up by the jungle is, or a city underground would be, well, anything's possible. And the idea that you would have some big ancient city of some type buried underneath 2 miles of ice from thousands of years ago, well, anything's possible. Anything's possible. Something's going on down there. But that is, answering questions on South America is nearly impossible. I've been asked questions about Richard Byrd. Richard Byrd would be Admiral Byrd, and he went down to Antarctica after the war with a aircraft carrier and all kinds of stuff. And he was supposed to be down there 8 months. He came back in 8 weeks. And he made some pretty outrageous statements, even on the record. His diaries have never been released. What he saw or what he found, I don't know. I don't know. But you can listen to Dr. Farrell on them. You can listen to the fact and separate it from you know, all we know is what is true, and we don't know a whole lot. We don't know a whole lot. It appears to me that anyone that sticks their nose in South America, whether it be the Carl Brugers, people just disappear. They get shot in the head. You know, we just had an incident where I think it was Ms. Hal Turner, was a spy for the FBI. He was spying on white rabbits. At least that's what they say. And he went down to South America. He went down to somewhere in Brazil. He's in jail for 10 years. I don't know who he was spying on down there, but it didn't go so well, apparently. Now, of course, he's in jail. He's in jail for inciting violence against judges, or so they say, but who knows what he's in jail for. He crossed the wrong rabbits, whatever he did. But making deals with the government can always be a dicey deal. But going to Brazil, going to South America, if you read all the stories about this ACACOR stuff and all the missing people and all the crazy stuff in the jungles, and of course you're dealing with jungles, and jungles can be dangerous in itself. So I don't know what more to tell you. Everyone asks me these questions. I can only put you down a path where you can hear legitimate sources on what is known and what is not known. But something's going on, especially in Antarctica. The Nazis, the National Socialists, have found something. They've done something. And we're just now seeing it come to fruition. It's coming down all the different channels. They're overwhelming you with the technology they came up with and what they may have found, and they're building into these events. And this event, of course, is World War III. It's clear they're building into these events. In fact, the Historical Society is no longer, he's labeling the end of the Third Reich the beginning of the Fourth Reich. And this is a famous historical society. They run an actual a war memorial in Germany, a war memorial for something specific. This is very interesting stuff, very exciting stuff too. Since we paid the price for it, we might as well know the whole story. But I'll put up that latest interview for Joseph Farrell and on Veritas. I can't tell you anything more because I don't have any more information. But you can read it for yourself. You can form your own opinion. In the next little piece, I've been asked about this Holy Blood, Holy Grail stuff. And guess where you're going down again? You're going down Nazi angles. Because they're the ones who were at the forefront, searching for the, Spear of Destiny. Those are metaphors. The Holy Blood, Holy Grail, those are metaphors. This is something I know to be true. What they were looking for, because they told you what they were looking for. And they actually believed it. They actually believed we descend from these white rabbit gods, and they're gonna call them up. And I've talked about that before. How crazy, what crazy concept they came up with to get a hold of them. And it goes back to the Glock. But in the next little question and answer, I'm going to answer those questions because there's been a whole lot of propaganda down the media about the Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And then you have another angle that's went down, and I'll get to that with the Harry Potter movies. I'll discuss that as best I can, to try to answer those questions for you. Before I go into Holy Blood, Holy Grail, I want to talk about one last thing. I was asked a question from a European listener. In one of the early shows, I talk about the different type of aliens. There's two dominant type of aliens in the alien lore and legend. I've never seen any of them, but there's two types. There's the gray aliens, and I'm sure everyone listening to this has seen these bug-eyed little gray aliens on TV or in popular culture. And then there's the Nordic aliens, which, of course, look just like us. I mentioned in one of the shows that one of these type of aliens I see every time I look in the mirror. I'm white, and the Nordic aliens are obviously white, but that was misunderstanding. I've never seen any alien, I don't think. But this is something that comes out in popular culture, and this has become dominant. I didn't realize how wide and large this alien type stuff was. I'm talking about the actual appearances or contactees or the actual experiences people have with these things until you start looking into it. Now, in America, 75% of all alien cases involve the grays, those little grays. However, in South America and Europe, it's the direct opposite. 75% involves some type of Nordic alien. 25% of alien cases in America involve Nordic aliens. The first one, of course, was a famous case of George Adamski, which was in November 20th, 1952. He's hanging out in Arizona, and some silver disc pulls up, and on a big blonde Aryan rabbit called Orthon comes out and starts yapping with him. And he's from Venus. Yeah, 1952. Interesting enough. Now, do I think he's from Venus? No. If it happened, it was from the U.S. military. Or we have another selection here. Yeah, we have another possibility, maybe a probability, of a certain group surviving and having a few bases and flying around telling people they're Nordic aliens. And maybe we are. I don't know. It's pretty funny stuff. But I wanted to touch on this because this is a great example of information being produced. And information is never produced for no reason. Nordic aliens really don't make it into popular culture. They don't make it on TV like the gray aliens. They don't really make it on the Discovery Channel. On Ancient Aliens, they don't really make it on there. They're there. They're in the Anunnaki, the Babylonian legends. They're all over the place. But they don't really talk about what these guys look like. But the Nordic aliens have become pretty a big deal post-World War II. I looked into it, and I was really shocked by all these different stories. And some of the stories are the funniest damn things you've ever read. You know, Nordic aliens come down and start talking to an interracial couple. Seriously. And these Nordic aliens are asking them why they're in an interracial relationship. I can't make this stuff up. I wish I had the actual case, the different cases, but you can find some of these online. It's just hilarious. And you know, some of the Nordic aliens make it known that they don't like Jew rabbits. They don't like Jews. It's funny stuff. And, of course, all these white rabbits that see them think for sure they're from another world or something. And maybe they are. Maybe there's a simple explanation to it. It's funny stuff. But one interesting point about the Nordic aliens that goes, I don't know if it's actually in the Wikipedia, but it comes out time and time again. It's one of the points that that I was asked how the Nazis could survive. Let's say they found something. Let's say they found some deep underground base that led to who knows where, somewhere in Antarctica. How could they survive? Well, one of the interesting cases, how would they import beer and sausages and all kind of stuff? Well, if you go into just what we know to be true about all these crazy stories about Nordic aliens, there's one little fact that comes out time and time again. That's really off the wall. That's never even pointed out, even among the sci-fi alien believing set. And one is they don't eat food. They drink potions and they eat some vitamins once a day. I'm going to repeat that. Time and time again, these Nordic aliens, in these stories, you know, the Nordic aliens come down, they come from an ideal society, and the ideal society is, of course, all white. How interesting is that? And that would be ideal for me. Yeah, because I don't have a home. But so please come visit Horace. But anyways, they come down and they come from an ideal society, but they don't eat. They don't. They've evolved past food. they don't eat food. They take some vitamins and they drink a potion once a day or something like that. And it sustains their bodies indefinitely, and they look perfect. They look perfect. I think that's fascinating information, because information is not produced for no reason. When you have something that's never been, you've never seen Nordic aliens really make it onto a TV show. There's no big movie with Nordic aliens and the Nordic gods smashing things coming in UFOs. They're certainly in the Babylonian text. Yes, they are. They're in different places on the planet in the myths and lores and legends, but they certainly make it into the UFO files. But one of the odd little facts that shows up time and time again that is off the wall, that they don't eat food. So I was asked, how would Nazis survive? Obviously, in South America, you could have a farm, and they obviously there's plenty of villages that were full of Germans. There are to this day. But when you start talking about how could they survive if they did find something, well, depending on what they found, let's go back into what they're looking for. They're looking for what? They're looking for Aryan origins. They're looking for the Aryan gods. That's what Hitler says. What do we know about the Aryan gods? Well, they eat golden apples. They drink the soma. They drink the nectar. They don't eat food. That is the wildest correlation here. So I was asked directly, do I think they found the formula for that? I have no idea what they've done. But that is the oddest fact. Even if there's no way to know anything about this Nordic alien business other than they have their own Wikipedia. Yeah. Other than there's a lot more people that have seen these things than you would actually believe. And they believe they've seen them. Just like the gray aliens. You know, I've never seen them, but someone believes they've seen them. This stuff is out there in popular culture. But the Nordic alien, the wildest fact about them is that they don't eat food. They drink a potion. And the thing that we know to be true about whether it be the Greek Olympians, or even when you get into the South American legends of the Kon-Tiki Viracocha, they don't eat food. They eat those golden apples. They drink that potion, which is interesting. It's fascinating stuff. And on the size of the Nordic aliens, the average size is our size, 6 to 8 feet tall. I don't know any 8-foot white rabbits, but, 6, 7 feet tall. Although there are reported ones, just not a whole lot, of 18 to 24 feet. If you know anything about the Babylonian cuneiforms, you've seen these guys. These guys are huge. They're big, 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 big boys and girls. I mean, we come up to their knees, basically. Some of them are. You could grow as big as the planet would support you. So if you're on a giant planet, you're going to grow a lot bigger. It also has to do with oxygen levels and everything else. You could grow a big white rabbit if you wanted to. I'm sure a planet, animals seek their optimal size based on the planet and based on the environmental conditions of the planet, basically. But you would have to look up. I'll put it up on my Twitter, the Nordic aliens. But the oddest fact is not what we know to be true, because there's no way to know any of this stuff is true. I mean, there's a stream of information that goes so far out there, and they're coming back to it. They come back to certain elements. I've been told that certain elements I went over on this program ended up are on Ancient Aliens, Ancient Astronauts series on Discovery. Different tidbits that I've talked about. Not that they know, are putting stuff that I'm putting out, but it's just an overwhelming amount of stuff coming down a pipeline. And South America is fascinating. The Nordic aliens are fascinating because someone's seeing something, even if it's military intelligence fooling around. The Nordic alien stuff really doesn't benefit our enemy. It doesn't. And the oddest piece of information in there has nothing to do with what we know to be true or false, because we have no way to know that. It's the idea that they don't eat food. So that is a fascinating piece of information there that someone keeps putting into these stories. Even if you were to make up all the different Nordic alien stories, the same group would be making them up. Highly improbable, but let's say it did. They are systematically putting in there that they don't eat food, that they drink the soma, they drink the nectar, they eat the golden apples. And of course, if you know anything about the Babylonian text, you know that they evolved past food. You can't really settle giant solar systems and stuff like that. Our food, killing animals for food, probably would become inefficient somewhere in our evolution. That's kind of common sense. If you drink a potion and could sustain yourself perfectly and indefinitely, for whatever, 1,000 years or a few thousand years or however a body can last, I'm dealing with so many unknowns here. But if you could do that, it would be pretty much optimal over eating food. It would be a hell of a lot easier to settle civilizations. in other worlds or other, even other continents. If I could take a bag, if I could take a formula for a potion with me, you could pretty much settle anywhere. And if you could get around scarcity, if you could get around fuel and gas, which the Nazis clearly had gotten around based on just their patents, they had gotten around, they had started getting around scarcity. And I've talked about this extensively in this podcast because it's important for you to know about scarcity and this current system you're in, economic system. They had clearly gotten around that. Well, you'd pretty much take yourself off the grid completely. So that is, you know, anything's possible. If someone's putting this information out there on the Nordic aliens, even if it's a big con job, someone's going somewhere with it. And someone's putting a little piece of, an odd piece of information time and time again, which shows up in all the mythologies of the Indo-European gods. And I don't care if you go to the, I don't care if you go to Iran, I don't care if you go to Persia or Iraq, I don't care what group, what sector you go into of mythology, whether it be the Greek or even the ancient Hindu, none of them eat food. They drink some potion or they eat some golden apples, and that is one of the oddest things out there. But I've never seen any aliens, but I assume they're always either military fooling around, or there is another probability now. Yeah, it's not a possibility, it's a probability. What the probabilities are, I don't know, but stay tuned, we'll find out. In the coming piece, I am going into Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And now a word from our sponsor. Have you ever said to yourself, gee, I would love an undercover lover? Or maybe you said to yourself, gee, I would like to be an undercover lover. We know exactly how you feel. For a limited time only, on WhiteRabbitRadio.net, you can buy an undercover lover. You can be an undercover lover. Yes, for only 25 carats. It is a great investment because all the money goes to fight white rabbit genocide, which is the thing we're about here at WhiteRabbitRadio.net. So if you're looking for an undercover lover, or if you're looking to be an undercover lover, or if you're just looking to have the coolest undercover lover in the history of the undercover lovers, we have just the ticket for you, all at a very, very low price. Yeah, so hop on over there and pull up that merchandise tab. And when you see the undercover lover, you'll go wild at how beautiful it is. And hit that buy button. Support fighting white rabbit genocide in the easiest way possible. Be an undercover lover. All right, I've been asked a lot of questions about Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and what's my take on the stuff. My take on the stuff in the 80s, the book came out, and it was probably an attempt by elements of European royalty to legitimize themselves by bringing out a new version of Divine Right of Kings. Divine Right of Kings goes back a long ways, and it's a lot larger concept than just European. You know, many of these kings around the world said they related to God, or gods, or whatever have you. And of course, Holy Blood, Holy Grail goes back a lot longer than that, actually. To tell you what I fully think of it, we got to go back, it's so monotonous for Europeans because everything goes back to World War II, and you go back to Holy Blood, Holy Grail is about the cup that holds the vessel that holds the blood of a god in this place, Jesus Christ. But the search for the Holy Grail, or the search for the cup that held the bloodline of a deity. When you get back into this concept, everything comes back to, believe it or not, there's another famous rabbit in the world that we've talked about so many times that you just can't escape. It goes back to the Nazis. It made an Indiana Jones movie, a pretty good movie. Indiana Jones and the Search for the Holy Grail, right? But this goes back to World War II, and it goes back to the previous topic we're talking about. It's all integrated. And what the Nazis believed and what they're looking for. But the Holy Grail is basically a metaphor in my mind. It's a metaphor for, you know, the Nazis made this really, really famous. They're looking for the Holy Grail. And let's go over what the Nazis believe, because it doesn't matter what I believe. It doesn't matter what you believe. It matters what they believed. And since someone post-World War II has tried to wipe white rabbits off the planet, maybe we should know what they've done. Maybe we should have a better clue than even I can give you. But anyways, they're searching for the Holy Grail, and this is well known in different circles. They're searching for the the Spear of Destiny, you've heard this type of thing. But those are metaphors. They're searching for what they believed that the indigenous white rabbits of Europe are the byproduct of a dominant extraterrestrial pantheon. Let's just put it in descend from gods, basically, and one in particular. His title is God. You know, and our ancestors all believed the same thing. They believed in ancestor worship. They worshiped Zeus, and Zeus was their ancestor. They worshiped Wotan, and Wotan was their ancestor. The Babylonians, you know, some of them worshiped Enlil, and Enlil was their ancestor. Ninurta. Ninurta's his son. Zeus had a son. His only begotten son later was Phoebus Apollo. You know, Wotan, you have Thor. These are common themes in our mythology. But our ancestors at one time, regardless of whether or not we liked it, believed that they actually descend from these guys. It's just a fact. They believed in ancestor worship. So what the Nazis believed is that they were true. You know, there are some believe that we were totally upside down, and then we met these little Jews, and then we got turned right side up. And there's others that believe, like the Nazis, that we were totally right side up, and then we got turned upside down. It depends on what side of the spectrum you want to come in on. But they believed that when they were talking about searching for the Holy Grail, and post-World War II, this type of propaganda on this Holy Blood, Holy Grail stuff has really picked up steam. What they believed is that there were certain elements of the Nordic bloodlines, Nordic being a lot larger than German and a lot larger than just in Norway. But the Northern Aryan bloodlines, Northern White Rabbit bloodlines. And that there would be certain bloodlines related to these guys directly. Still, pure as the driven snow. Unpolluted. And races always trend toward purity. It doesn't matter whether it's the Africans or even Arabs. There's going to be pure Arabs out there. Races trend toward purity, and nothing is probably more common among white rabbits simply because when ancient civilizations become fall prey to a lot of miscegenation, the place collapses, white rabbits go into consolidation, and speckly brown rabbits generally don't make the cut. So I'm guessing that it would be true for us. Racists trend toward a great deal of purity in spite of the propaganda. But what they believed is that an element of the Nordic bloodlines, there were certain bloodlines of the Nordic, and of course Hitler was fascinated with Nordic bloodlines and all that kind of stuff, but that certain bloodlines would go directly based on back to these deities. Back to God, basically. And so you got this concept of search for the Holy Grail, or a vessel that holds the blood of a deity. In this case, of course, the Holy Grail is supposed to be the cup that Jesus Christ drank out of. And in the book Holy Blood, Holy Grail, it talks about that Jesus sired a son and daughter and all kinds of, all different types of things, that there's an actual bloodline related to Jesus Christ. But as a concept, this concept really picks up steam in World War II, and it goes back even further than that with the Divine Right of Kings, but the National Socialists made it famous because they were searching for Aryan origins, right? I mean, we're back in the same theme. We tend to separate these things, whether it be their trip to the Canary Islands and their trips to Machu Picchu, whatever the Nazis were looking at, we tend to separate, but they're not separating anything. They believe one integrated, everything was integrated, and they want that integration. They want this type of physics. And they want to know the different bloodlines that go back, and they want a scientific way to prove it. And all that type of thing. In fact, there are many that believe that the Human Genome Project was just that, was identifying the different bloodlines that go back to these particular these particular deities. And it is not every single group on this planet believes that they descend from the gods. I mean, the little Jew rabbits are quite famous for saying they got a gene from their god, or at least elements of them do. Believe that. So I don't know what to tell you about it other than to point out the obvious, that this stuff goes back to Adolf Hitler and what the Nazis believed. What is true, I don't know. We won't know until it shows up on the doorstep. But it is a theme that they're constantly playing with in popular culture, of some white rabbits being related to gods. You know, you have this movie that comes out, Peter Jackson and the Olympians, and he's related to Poseidon. And he can activate this sword because he's related to Poseidon. Poseidon's his ancestor. We're constantly dealing with these concepts And in fact, in popular culture, they're taking it into another angle, which would be very, very relevant for the little ones. Because if it were true that we were a byproduct of some dominant extraterrestrial pantheon, some would be related to them directly, and some would be related to them indirectly. And that would create a whole new challenge. Even if we were in a world of our own, it would create a whole new challenge. You'd get the mudbloods and the full wizards. An interesting, overheard an interesting conversation these white rabbits were asking me, because they think I know a little bit about the movies, and I just know a little bit. Anyone can study up on propaganda techniques or getting out a particular message or how to put out a meme and come back to it. But the Harry Potter movies, I've never read the books, and I've only seen a few of the movies, but they deal with this concept of mudbloods and full wizards. And this is a typical type of racialist type thinking that is very accurate. Why the red hippo out in Hollywood would so much as worry? Why the pink rabbits out in Hollywood would even worry about, why wouldn't they put a mulatto rabbit as a mudblood? You know, when you think mudbloods, when white racial thinking rabbits think mudblood and full wizards, they think of speckly brown rabbits, mulatto rabbits, and white rabbits. But they're not dealing with that concept at all. They're dealing with this concept of, basically, from another angle, of what would happen if, let's say you have all the different white rabbits on the planet. Some of them would be related to Zeus directly, and some of them not so directly. What would be the interplay? What would be the interaction? And you get the mudbloods and the full wizards. That's at least the direction the stuff goes. I'm agnostic on what I believe because I haven't seen enough yet. But the Nazis opened up this Pandora's box because what they believe that we descend from them, and they wanted to contact them. They wanted to get in touch with them. They were searching for the Aryan gods, and they weren't playing games. They were giving their lives to do this, so they were very serious about it, regardless of what we think about it. But they generally thought, when you hear that they're searching for the Holy Grail or something, they're searching for the actual bloodlines, the bloodlines actually related to God. It's that simple. They're looking for the vessels that hold the blood. It's as simple as, in the modern take on it, I that Jesus had a baby and all that kind of stuff like that. I don't know what to say about that. I'm agnostic about all that kind of stuff. Other than it goes against, obviously, traditional Christian doctrine. But it's something that's picked up steam post-80, and now, of course, you've got another sub-theme of that, and that's which most of you have never looked at it from that angle. But that's what they're talking about when they go into the Human Genome Project, what they're looking for. They're looking for all kinds of interesting things, and what they believe is no different than what all these other Indians they show on the ancient astronaut, ancient alien specials believe, is that that we are the byproduct of a superior intelligence on some level. And that's where they're going, and they're looking for the bloodlines that are related to them on some level. And these topics, of course, I'm way out of my league, but I do know that the Nazis were constantly dealing with this next generation physics. We'll call it the white rabbit physics, and they got a very, very pure stream. The pink rabbit banksters and the leechers have a polluted stream. They can't make it all the way, and that's their problem now. They have inferior physics. But the National Socialist brought out a superior physics. Dr. Farrell has gone, my official sources for this go into this from a variety of different angles. But one thing that's very difficult to get at first, it takes a while to get that everything was integrated to them. Because this physics is very integrated. You're constantly dealing with rotation and counter-rotation. When you're looking at the swastika, you're dealing with two counter-rotations. You're dealing with something in rotation. When you're dealing with the sun, you're dealing with another rotating balls of plasma. When you're dealing with the Glock, this bell-shaped thing, you're dealing with two counter-rotating drums. When you're dealing with human DNA, if you look up human DNA, and you can wiki it, you're going to see two counter-rotating helixes. You're going to see the double helix in rotation. And whenever you deal with hyperdimensional physics of any type, if there is such a thing, it always involves some type of rotation, and that's what they're dealing with. But everything is integrated right down to the DNA. And the information coming out on human DNA is fascinating. My official sources, I haven't seen all their official sources, but there's a new book coming out by guess who? By our dear Dr. Farrell, and he's coming out with, it's at the publisher now. I get notified as soon as this rabbit puts something to publisher called, I think it's called Genes, Giants, Monsters, and Men. And he's talking about human DNA. And we've talked about consciousness and what's coming down the pipeline. And there is a big difference in races. And the big difference is going to be this topic of consciousness. But when this DNA, this little spiral is in rotation, that we see an active rotation, you know, it looks like it's in rotation. It's acting as a transducer on some level. It's interfacing directly with the physics of the media. And you get into the areas of consciousness and consciousness being non-local and all kinds, our existence being non-local and all kinds of wild stuff that they are just getting geared up to bring information down. But Dr. Farrell's coming out with a new book, and I'm guessing he's going to lower the boom on certain things because the word is out that certain genotypes are more efficient transducers. They interface in a more unique way with the physics of the medium, and I don't even fully understand what I'm telling you. I'm just passing this along, but it is the, when you deal with race, you're dealing with an iceberg. You're dealing with what you see above the water. When you're dealing with consciousness, you're dealing with this concept of a soul that can't die. You're dealing with a big, giant iceberg underneath the water. It's the iceberg you don't see until you hit it. And apparently it's mammoth. It's monstrous. It's definitive. Because you start dealing with, different frequencies, that certain DNA holds on to different all kinds of different stuff. In other words, you would be able to see how white a white rabbit is pretty easily. But you're dealing with a whole spectrum of stuff coming down the pipeline, and I'll be interested to see the book when he brings it out. But that's where they're going with Holy Blood, Holy Grail. That's what the Nazis opened up. That's what they believed. The Human Genome Project, that's what they believe. Now, where's it? I can only let you in on that and point you a direction. I'm agnostic because I haven't seen enough to know. But that's the big tip off of race. Race will come down to consciousness and come down to something we haven't quantified. It'll be some little section of our DNA, some little section of our DNA. But anytime you're dealing with our next generation physics, you're dealing with rotation. And apparently hyperdimensional physics of any kind, you're always dealing with rotation. And we are always dealing with counter rotations. Doesn't matter whether it's the swastika, which apparently is some type of solar symbol based on the physics of the sun. It has a philosophical or religious as well as a scientific meaning. You're dealing with a total integration right down to DNA. Look at the concept for the Glock, the bell, the gateway, the actual test rig they were developing as a gateway into this physics, had to get to peer into this physics. Well, you're dealing with something, two counter-rotating drums, always in rotation. You're constantly dealing with this concept right down to our DNA. It's fascinating stuff. I wish I knew more to tell you. But I can only point to the obvious, the origins, and what these guys believed and what they were willing to do and how this stuff survives. It doesn't die. You can't escape it. Every morning I get up, you think you're going to escape something Hitler did. You can't. You can't. It just hasn't been reconciled. It won't go away. And we're building into certain events and we'll know more when it happens. One of those type of things. And it'll be sooner rather than later. But that's what the Holy Blood, Holy Grail thing comes from. It comes from the Divine Right of Kings and all kinds of, some of it, a lot of it nonsense, but some of it I just don't know. But it has everything to do with DNA. It has everything to do with the genome projects, and different groups have their own agenda. Like I said, the obvious group that believes they have a little gene from their God are Jews, or some of the Jews. I don't know that every single one of them has it. And usually you're dealing with groups within groups, right? If you're dealing with the concept of the Nazi concept of Holy Grail, you're dealing with all the Nordic rabbits or everything that descends from the Nordic or Northern European lines, and that goes a lot broader than they thought at the time. You're dealing with certain bloodlines. You're dealing with basically a race within a race, and you'd be dealing with consciousness. But you go into intelligent design, you go into all these different topics that we've all heard about, but they're going to go into it in a lot more elaborate way, especially I'm guessing after what we think of as World War III, they're going to start this process, and it'll be pretty obvious to anyone on this planet. Now, the full extent of it, where it goes, I don't know. I'm interested in seeing Dr. Farrell's next book because he's going into consciousness, and they have let it slip. They've let it slip just recently. They've let it slip. It's come down the pipeline that some genotypes are more efficient transducers. In other words, we're pulling in a different consciousness. In other words, we are radically different, which just kind of makes sense. because we make progress. Now, when it comes to some elements of the Jew rabbits, the ones that get into positions of power, they seem to make do something unnatural, too. They destroy things. Beavers don't necessarily destroy beaver dams. They may build a whole lot of them, but they don't necessarily destroy them. Some elements of the Jewish elites, they are extremely destructive. I mean, anything you want destroyed, just put them in charge. It's kind of unnatural. They're like the antithesis of us. But that's hopefully I covered most of those questions and answers on the Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and the Harry Potter, the Mudbloods. Yeah, they're not talking about race as we think of it. They're talking about what some believe is coming. Now, why they would do it, is it speculative? Are they just going somewhere with it? Well, I don't know. They're going somewhere with this stuff, with this Nazi stuff. Anytime you see something that big, they're going somewhere with it. But when it comes to the DNA and the genetic stuff, I don't really know what to tell you other than to point out the obvious. They wouldn't hesitate to make a mudblood an African or a mulatto because it sounds racial to most racial thinking white rabbits, but in reality they're dealing with some other concept that we've just started stumbling across, and this is a concept the Nazis were dealing with in regards to the Nordic bloodlines and what they believe. But it's all integrated. It's all part and parcel to the same stream of information. It all goes hand in hand into what they were doing and what they were looking for. I wanted to throw one thing in on this podcast. It's a question I get asked, and it is a very, very relevant and good question. Are there any mainstream fictional books that have these themes regarding Nazi or Nazism or Nazi International or Nazi survival that kind of, you know, that anyone can read? What is out there that they can read besides the Lanzig novels and some of this other stuff referenced in Nazi International? And there is one great example. I've waited in this podcast. I should have done it sometime after the first 24 or the first 30. But I'm going to do it now. I'm going to tell you about a book that came out in, I believe, it was 80 or 82. It's a book by a pretty famous author named W.A. Harbinson. That's H-A-R-B-I-N-S-O-N. And the book is titled Genesis. And if anyone has listened to this podcast thus far, let's say you've listened to all the Foul White Rabbits, you would be advised, if you want to get your bell rung, to go back in time. That's really what you're doing in this fictional book, is you're going back in time and reading an international bestseller from 1980-82, from the early 80s. And it was a worldwide hit. And it is a wild, wild book. Especially if you listen to the show thus far, because there's a consistent set of memes that's been out there. They come back to it, they let it die, they comes up again, it's all over the Discovery Channel, Nazi, 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 what these guys do, and then it comes down to fictional. And fictional is basically how they've kept it alive, fictional, video games. Now, of course, most of the stuff that came out fictional about their weapon systems, some of it ended up in the Science Channel, some of the latest specials. All my listeners keep on emailing me that they keep watching this stuff. But there is one fictional book that is a must read. The good news is that I'll put a link to it on Amazon to give you an idea. Not that you have to buy it there, but it's only a penny. It's dirt cheap. You can get it at your local library. It's an international bestseller. It's had probably three or four different covers. But W.A. Harbinson wrote The Running Man in 1969. It's kind of a famous book, I believe, that he wrote. He wrote several different, a handful of UFO books, but the only one I've read, the one of interest here, is called Genesis. It's titled Genesis, and I'll put it up, and you can see it, and you can get it in your local library. You can get it at your local bookstore for $1. You can probably buy it on Amazon for a penny and have it shipped to you for $3. I mean, it's cheap as chips. But once you read it, you're going to understand that there are a few themes that have been out there a long, long time in regarding World War II and how it ended, and regarding regarding Aryan aliens, and regarding what was going on right after World War II and the type of technology Nazis are dealing with. The book is a trip. It's Arctic survival, Antarctic Reich, all that stuff is in there. It's a plethora. It's also a pretty good read. I've been asked if it was made into a movie. No, not to my knowledge, but I believe the movie rights were sold and shelved. It scared some people. It scared some people at the time. And it continues to scare people when they read it and then they look around. If you know anything about media, if you know anything about propaganda, because there's a few themes in there, that just won't die. And it's relevant for this audience because I've been, you know, it's 2010. This book is 30 years old at least. And the book is titled Genesis, G-E-N-E-S-I-S by W.A. Harbinson. And the epic novel, The World's Most Fearsome Secret, that there are, you know, there's a handful of countries with UFOs on this planet, but there's someone out there with UFOs that far surpass theirs. And it remained a military secret about the third power. And that no one can lay a finger on their technology, it's so advanced. And no one wants you to know who they are. And it's again, it's a wild, wild book. One of the wildest things in the books is when some certain rabbits who will remain stateless, who Dr. Farrell calls Nazi International, well, they're flying around these UFOs and they're stunning people in the light and they're chipping them. They're putting little I guess some type of electrofeedback mechanism inserting in their heads, and then they're controlling them indefinitely. Kind of like if the Taliban were radio controlled. It's wild. So you would just have to read it. And once you do, you're going to say, I understand what Horace is talking about. It's more relevant than now than ever because it's 30 years old. But yet this is more relevant now than it was then. Then it was just a work of fiction. Now, am I saying parts of it are true? I have no idea. But you're going to get a good idea of what we're talking about. And again, the book is about where UFOs come from. But it came out the same time as that other famous book, Communion. This is not a book about gray aliens. This is a book about Aryan aliens, and they're not aliens. And again, you'd have to read it. It is a quick read. It's several hundred pages long. It's over 500 pages. But you'll read it very, very quickly. And if you're interested in this type of thing, you're interested in propaganda, you're interested in staging stuff over several decades, this book would be a must-read besides maybe the Dr. Farrell books and some of the sources listed there. But this is the fictional book that was an international bestseller that talks about Nazi survival, and it does so in a very, very unique way. Now, I don't know much more than that, but you'd have to read it to understand. The good news is it's cheap as chips, as my UK listeners say. It's a very inexpensive book, but it is a great example, and that's a relevant question. Points you to a fictional book that can come back to these memes that you can see. And this is the best one because it's old, but you've never heard of it. It's 30 years old. But you're going to see these themes come through every single day on the Discovery Channels, the History Channels, the Sci-Fi Channels, the Science Channels. And it is extremely relevant for the topic of discussion. When it comes down to something that's been around that just won't die, they keep on. There is a consistent underlying message, an underlying theme that just won't die. I don't care what anyone says. It's a meme. They're coming back to the meme. They're planting the meme. They're letting it die down a little bit. Then they're picking up. And right now, of course, you have a massive amount of noise coming down different channels. What they've done, I don't know. But they've done something. Anytime you can read a book like Genesis from the 1980s and then sit and watch the Discovery Channel, the History Channel, the Science Channel, and then read books like Nazi International coming from Dr. Farrell, if you can do those things, I don't care if it's now or 4,000 years from now, in another subject matter, someone's going somewhere with it. And it ain't the Jews. Yeah, this is Nazism is only good for the Jews in the short to intermediate term. When you have little kids in Thailand running around in National Socialist t-shirts, it's not good for the Jews. This stuff won't die, but it's a great example, and that's a relevant question. It's relevant now in the podcast because if you go back and read it, you'll scratch your head. You'll understand a few things. If you're a student of propaganda, it's a must read, and it is actually a pretty good book. A lot of people were surprised they didn't make it in the movies. I'm not. You know, I have not known about this book for more than 5 years. But there is stuff like this out there, and there may be yet another one that I don't know about. I mean, it's in 1980. How many of my listeners were actually running around reading fictional books in 1980? Most of my listeners maybe weren't even old enough then, but to read. But it's a great example. It's a great example, and it's an example that's not exactly well chosen. There may be yet another example, but this stuff is all over the place. And I will post the Amazon link on Twitter. It has a variety of different colors because it's been in covers because it's been multiple different printings. But it is the W.A. Harbinson Genesis. It's not his first UFO book, this Project UFO book. It's like his third, but this is the one that everyone reads. This is the only one I read. I can't really vouch for anything I haven't read. But it is a great example of what's going on in regards to the propaganda coming out. And I just wanted to throw that into this Q&A because that was a relevant question, and I've told some people about it, and the ones that read it get back and are pretty blown away by it because they're seeing a consistent theme again, a trend, if you will. There's a trend in place, and it's pretty obvious where they're going with this. Well, someone's going to go somewhere with it. It always goes somewhere with it. You know, it's like the war with Iran business. You know, War with Iran now has its own website, warwithiran.org. You know, this one's been out for so long, and it's been out there for years. Even prior to the Gulf War with Iraq, the neocons were on that. They're the war rabbits. They're the pink rabbits of war, and their job is to always be on the war tip, to always be able to vouch for a war, and they certainly do every day on Fox News, don't they? When they're running those, you watch that little news ticker on Fox News, they're going to come back to that meme. They're going to go over it and over it to raise those poll ratings so they can get their war with Iran, and they will, watch. Sooner rather than later, but anytime you see something like this, and it won't die, whether it be war with Iran or even the, I don't care what subject matter, someone's going somewhere with it. That's just kind of common sense. Especially if they're putting a lot of money behind it. It takes a great deal of money to put the meme down all these different venues. And of course, the ones when it regards to World War II and how it ended always come down a fictional account. But what we've seen is a trend of fictional stories coming to life. Whether it be there, usually in regards to their weapon systems. But I'll just throw that out there. That is a good book, and it's a great read. The best book I've ever bought for a penny. Let's put it to you that way. Yeah, I bought it for like a penny. Very, very inexpensive book because it was a bestseller. It's an international bestseller, but it's up there on Amazon. It's up there. I got the Amazon link up there, and you can at least look at it and go to your local library and snag a copy. And if you're interested in that, and see exactly what we're talking about. So to wrap up this short question and answer, coming down this angle, I can only point out the obvious, and most of it goes back to World War II and a lot of the South America stuff. A lot of this human genetic stuff is not known. What we do know is race is real and quantify it at the local forensic pathologist can quantify it and tell you what race you are. Of course, to keep his job, he has to turn around and tell you that race doesn't exist. There's a little contradiction there because we live in a close society committed to white rabbit genocide. But I can't answer a great many questions about South America because there's too many unknowns. But I will put up the information for those, and I'll put up the YouTube link for Joseph Farrell's, one of his latest interviews. He goes into all this stuff on the actual facts, what is known, what is not known. And you can decide for yourself. And regarding the Human Genome Project and the genetics and the Holy Blood, Holy Grail, it all goes together, believe it or not. All this stuff is integrated with this next generation physics. There's not a separation. It's like when we see the television episodes of the Nazis in the Canary Islands or the Nazis in Tibet or the Nazis in South America, we think that these are separate incidents, that they're going for something separate, but they are not. They're not. They're all integrated. And that's what's interesting about it, and I don't know where it's going to go. Usually it goes in one direction. It's somewhere out there. Yeah, look up. Go somewhere out there. All the crazy alien stuff or everything the National Socialists are looking at or stuff on the Sci-Fi Channel right now, it always goes in that direction. And we'll just have to wait and see. And I'm certain we will be seeing something, especially right after this big war they're brewing up, this big crazy war. But in regards to that, there's limited things I can do other than point you in a direction, especially in regarding an area where so little is known, and what is known becomes a big mystery, like the Antarctic. What is known is a total mystery. It's a lot of head-scratching. There's not a lot of talk going on, and in fact, there hasn't been any solid information of anything other than a bunch of fictional nonsense up until maybe 2010. Certain seismographs were released. And this has been going on quite a while, the seismic data coming out of Antarctica, definitely the last 30 years, more specifically post-September 11, 2001, or let's say post-2000. Something's going on down there. Don't know what. Stay tuned. Stay tuned. If information comes out, as more information comes out, I'll be the first to let you know, or put you in a path, or put you around someone that can let you know. And I'm quite certain it come down the Dr. Farrell Pass or some of the different historical societies or who are very, very legitimate. But it becomes highly speculative. Other than the trend we're watching a consistent trend regarding Nazis of fictional things that come down a path of fiction, but then end up being true. Not all of it, bits and pieces. And we got these rabbits that won't die. Everything comes from them. Everything goes back to them. They totally rearranged our universe when they came on the scenes. It's just true. And after that, someone's, of course, tried to wipe us off the planet. And regarding this podcast, we are now not only on a consistent message, we're pushing out a consistent image in all these different areas. Now, that isn't free. A consistent message is always free, but the consistent image isn't. And so during these podcasts, because I'm so horrible, I usually forget to mention products we're selling like that have to do with our consistent image, the Undercover Lover. I always forget to mention them, so we started putting in commercials. That was the ideal. I'd do short commercials that'd be kind of funny, and I'd put them in there just to tell people what's out there. There will be new products added with the Undercover Lover, those the eyes forward symbol, those big eyes on the T-shirt. There'll be other things come out with that, with those images on it in the next few days. We've been getting things up on the website slow, the different merchandise people want, because we have a lot of cool graphics, and we've done that to try to get out images and to have a way to get out in the public conscious, as well as to if the show was successful, we needed a way to raise revenues to make sure it could sustain itself long term. We have a unique challenge in that we don't limit downloads, and that's never been a problem for us. We also have a unique challenge. There's some different groups may be interested in exchanging email links with us, and these are not racial groups at all that you are used to dealing with, but they are huge internet sites. And so we have to be able to handle that traffic, which is not a bad problem to have at all. Even if we wanted to advertise there at discounted rates, you have to be able to handle the traffic. And that all becomes a challenge, and all becomes a planning, but not a bad challenge to have. And so far, this is the first month. This first month, we've started. I started really plugging a consistent image, the Undercover Lover. It's been a month and a half, maybe. We brought it out no more than a couple months. And of course, the first month out, it helped support the site. And now it looks like it's going to support the site fully this month, as far as the revenue it's raising. I don't know how it'll work if we start getting a terabyte of downloads every day, but we'll keep up with it. Because it seems like the more listeners we have, the more get interested in supporting the show in their own unique way. We've heard you on the coffee mugs. There's actually a new person has been hired just to put up stuff, to bring our merchandise up to gear, to get all the different, like the girls' t-shirts. There's going to be some more t-shirts added for ladies, with the Undercover image on it. And then we're bringing out coffee mugs and beer steins. Different cool stuff that you've asked for. We've heard you. Typically, a show like this, the average podcast that becomes successful, believe it or not, they just hook up with Cafe Express. They cut some deal, or they cut some deal with some online retailer. Cafe Express is very, very expensive. If I sold t-shirts for $25 on Cafe Express, I probably wouldn't make a dollar. This podcast wouldn't make a dollar, but we're able to sell t-shirts at a competitive price and actually pocket enough money to sustain the show, which is by design. But if you were to have a successful podcast, you could easily hook up with maybe a Print Perfection or Cafe Express and sell all kinds of different merchandise real easily. Since I talk about racial issues, that's not really possible. We have to go down a different angle. There's good news in there that everyone we deal with likes the podcast, and there's bad news. It takes a little bit longer. You know, you can't just hook up a cart to Cafe Express and put out 1,000 different items like coffee mugs and different sizes and beer signs. Everything takes a little bit longer this way, but we do have stuff rolling, and there's things that's going to be coming out, every single day, like the coffee mugs and the beer steins, so stay tuned. I'll let you aware of that. So if you hear these little commercials, they're just it's because I have this habit of forgetting to tell you about products there, or forgetting to push stuff because I'm no good at pushing anything. But that is what we're on. We're on a consistent image as well as a consistent message, and letting you know to get it out there. And so far, so good. I've been asked directly, and I'm the wrong person to ask about merchandise. You have to go over to the guys at NewsNet 14 and who runs those carts. But I always pass everything on about you wanted to buy a bunch of T-shirts for your bar. I don't know how many you'd have to buy to get wholesale pricing, but they will do that. Yeah, there are other websites that are going to sell our stuff too, supposedly, which is fine. I want it everywhere. I want it everywhere, especially our main image. You know, it's not as important as a green goddess on a coffee mug, but I know you guys want those too. But we'll try to get out everything. And there's been a new person put in charge of putting stuff up in our merchandise cart, so we can get up in a timely manner to get moving here, so we can keep growing at the rate we've been growing. We always have new listeners coming on, new listeners catching up to the show, new listeners every month. We have at least, it seems like, so many thousands of downloads on the first handful of shows that start the process of listening to it again, which is cool. And now, of course, we're tapping into not just you know, we first came down a Stormfront angle. Many of you have heard this show on Stormfront. Now we are branching out into the alternative news and research crowd, and the vast majority of them are white rabbits, and there's nothing. None of them talk about anything from a racial angle, and I cover everything they want to hear about, intentionally. They also tend to be active in wanting to change the system, wanting to know ways to do it legally. They're not interested in dying or blowing up stuff. They just want the type of information we provide. So I wanted to thank anyone that went out of their way to buy Undercover Lovers. There are several new colors up. And different other gear will be coming up as you requested. They actually have some more female t-shirts specifically for girl rabbits that'll be coming up too. Any hour, I'm told. Any hour, because they got someone special now someone cracked the whip, and some rabbit, her job is to put stuff up on that website as the gear gets perfected, you could say. So we'll look for that, and I'll post that stuff up on the Twitter as soon as it comes out. And if you hear the commercials during the broadcast, well, that's because I always forget to tell you about stuff. I'm no businessman, and it shows. But thank you for supporting the show, and we'll keep forward. We'll keep going forward. In Follow the White Rabbit 50, I will be going into white rabbit psychology and ecology. I'm going to talk about why white rabbits saving things, and this is pretty interesting. And we're going to go way back in time. And you think you know what a white rabbit's saving when they're saving it? Most of us read these articles about white rabbits trying to save Mexicans in the desert and end up dying in the process. Well, there's a lot of other things we try to save and die in the process too, and we're going to talk about this. It's pretty fascinating stuff. We're also going to talk about the origin of the black nobility of Europe. We're going to talk about the information that's come out on them, and we're going to talk about the racial data in ancient Rome. Fascinating stuff as well. And I'll be back with you, and these will be released at the same time, so you're going to get some information. We're also going to we might release two or three at the same time, so you're going to have all kinds of podcasts to listen to. And this is Horace the Avenger signing off on another episode of Horace the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit. Thank you for listening. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.
Now that you have gone away, I feel so cold.